Rumsey, and we will hear first from Mr. Harrington.
Good morning, and thank you, Your Honor. And may it please the Court, I'm James Harrington for the plaintiffs and appellants, Phoenix Entertainment Partners and Sleptone Entertainment Corporation, who we'll refer to collectively as Sleptone as in the briefs. This is a case that is here on appeal from a Rule 12b6 dismissal of Sleptone's trademark infringement claims involving the defendant's use of what we regard as counterfeit karaoke tracks. These are karaoke tracks that are in use, in commercial use, in the defendant's facilities.
So is your claim a claim of reverse passing off?
It is not a claim of reverse passing off, Your Honor. It is actually a claim of passing off.
So your theory has to be that when they put it on their hard drive, they've made their own thing, and they are saying that their thing is yours because they don't delete the trademark sound choice designation. So the viewers look at this and they see sound choice.
I think that's it precisely. It's not a very difficult concept. They have made a product. It is a physical good, even though we conveniently think of that as an electronic product. It is a good
it's as you say, a new good is created when the digital karaoke files are copied from a disc or a cassette tape onto a computer. Then isn't the same risk of confusion presented when a legitimate a customer of yours makes an authorized copy as when someone like these defendants make an unauthorized copy? In other words, what I want to get to is this. What is the difference between those two scenarios in terms of the possibility of confusion?
Well, I think that's a very good and very incisive question here, because the difference between an authorized copy and an unauthorized copy, as the defendants are accused of making here, is the fact of authorization. If you think about trademarks.
And so there's no difference. You're saying, I had the same question Judge Rovner did in terms of the likelihood of confusion. I was surprised you weren't bringing this as a copyright case, to be honest, because there the authorization is central.
Well, I understand that, and we have not brought this as a copyright case for reasons that are really not part of the case, except for the fact that in many cases we don't own the copyright at issue here. There are many other potential copyright owners that do own rights. And we may or may not own copyrights in some of the works that are at issue. But this is not a copyright case, because we're fundamentally unconcerned with the communicative aspects of the content here. The trademark, the purpose of trademarks, trademark registration and common law rights, is to promote the control of quality of goods. So when you have an unauthorized copy, that is a copy over which we have zero control in the making. We have not reviewed it. We have not authorized it. We can't tell what the quality of it is, or at a minimum, we don't have the ability to tell them it must be to this level of quality. It must feature these certain characteristics.
So is that why, in your brief, I could not see any representation that the plaintiffs require that the copies their customers make adhere to any quality standards?
There is actually in the complaint there are allegations regarding Sleptone's media shifting policy. That is the policy that Sleptone uses to exercise control over the quality of copies that are made by its downstream customers.
But there's nothing in that policy that relates to the quality of the hard drive or data compression or any of the other things that might affect the quality of the copy. You want a one-to-one correspondence between the CDGs and the number of copies that the person makes, but that doesn't say anything about what you've said in your brief now about, well, if you compress the data, maybe the quality of the copy won't be what digital copies are usually like, which is perfect. So I was confused about that, and I guess I also want to just make sure that we don't lose sight of Judge Rovner's first point, because you need to show more than copying to prevail in a Lanham Act case. You've got to show likelihood of confusion, and that is really a tough one for me.
Well, I think the confusion arises because consumers are unable to determine who is responsible for the product they are using at these shows. Ordinarily, a trademark on a product conveys information to the consumer about what sort of, or about who is responsible for the quality of that product. And there are numerous instances in case law where that is perhaps the driving force behind trademark law. It's about who should you hold responsible for the quality, either good quality so that you want to return and buy more products by that producer, or poor quality so that you can avoid them in the future.
So if I buy a DVD and I put it in my computer because I don't feel like working that afternoon, I'd rather watch a movie, and of course it creates a copy, it's a temporary copy, but on the hard drive of my computer, I'm infringing the trademark of the creator of the movie if I invite one of my law clerks to come in and watch it with me?
That's going to be in the nature of a private exhibition. We're talking about commercial uses here.
So I couldn't assume, even assuming I had all the ASCAP and, you know, other licenses, BMI, whoever it is, I wouldn't be able to show a DVD. You can't even show a DVD without putting it in a machine, which then generates its own electronic version of the thing and then conveys it onto a screen. That's what I'm trying to get to.
Well, if we're talking about a commercial use, where
right,
you
in
are,
a bar, you know, I've decided, you know, and again, there's no issue here, as I understand, about the correct licenses for the tracks that are the background tracks to the karaoke.
Right, that's not an issue.
That's
you're talking about
issue.
Performance rights.
And performance rights.
We don't own the performance rights in those. In those tracks, and therefore they're not an issue in this case.
But as far as we know, Basket Case paid whatever they need to pay.
As far as we know, and it's irrelevant because those organizations don't pay us in the first place. They do not collect royalties
right
on our behalf. But I think getting to that question of where is the likelihood of confusion, consumers seeing our trademark on the screen when an item is played should be able to be confident that we are the origin of that product. And so
and you actually are, except for this intermediate technology that's necessary to create the soundtrack that all of these inebriated bar patrons are using as they sing or whatever they're doing.
If if we were to talk about playing from a product that we actually produced, where there's a disc involved and a reader that reads the information on that disc, and if there is some ephemeral copy that is made in the process of conveying that material over to a screen for display, we're not concerned with that because that's necessary for the use of the original product.
But if the two copies are exactly the same, how can you have confusion if they're the same copy? Isn't it really an issue of whether or not you have authorization in terms of copyright, rather than should this court be concerned with converting a copyright case into a trademark case?
Well, I think you're right to be concerned about that issue, but it's not an issue in this case. And let me give you an example. Let's say that Louis Vuitton puts out a handbag that carries its trademarks, and it sells that product. And someone comes along, and contrary to most of what you might find at a swap meet or on the corner, the street corner, this is a very good copy, an identical copy made by someone else, utterly without Louis Vuitton's authorization. I don't think it would be difficult at all for this court to see that as a trademark infringement of a
but
very
that's such a different example. You used the Rolex watch in your brief, and I see very little similarity between that and simply running your tracks through the hard drive system of the bar because the customers want to be able to choose. You know, I'd like to sing this now, and I'd like to sing this other thing next, and the hard drive creates an efficiency. You don't have to keep taking CDs in and out and popping them into some machine, but it's really just it's part of the projection function.
Isn't that moving one product from one place to another? I mean, like taking a Rolex off the shelf and putting it on the table, or taking it off the disc and putting it on a hard drive. It's the same item. We're just moving it from one place to another, right?
It might be if the defendant actually did purchase the underlying CDs. But in order to get to that point, you have to draw a factual inference in the defendant's favor that, in fact, they did have all the CDs and the one-to-one correspondence and all that they lacked. Oh, and in fact, beyond that, the copy is identical, which is also a factual inference that it is that the copies that were made are identical to what is on the CDs. Those factual inferences in the context of a 12B6 motion are wholly inappropriate. Because they favor the defendant, the moving party, and that is black-letter law and has been from time immemorial. The fact that it is possible that they are identical is a factual question that should be developed in discovery, and it was inappropriate for the district court in this instance to grant a 12B6 motion at this stage of
the case. But if a district court, you know, looking, for instance, at the Daftar decision, which seems to warn against using the Lanham Act as a substitute for what is really a claim of copyright infringement. If the district court understands that from the get-go, well, there you go.
Well, I think that the critical distinction here is that really the Daystar case is not about allowing trademark infringement to substitute for copyright infringement. It is about making sure that
although the court says that, actually.
It does say that, but but it
talks about it at length.
It's it's fundamentally about confining copyright infringement and trademark infringement to their own spheres. And trademark infringement in this case is what is occurring. There is a copy being made of a product, and it bears our trademarks. We're not concerned with the content. I see that.
If you would like to save a bit of rebuttal time, that's
fine. I would
like
that. Thank you.
We'll hear next from Mr. Bafke.
Thank you. May it please the court, counsel. I'm here representing the appellees, Danette Rumsey, and the Basket Case Pub Incorporated.
Away, Mr. Bafke, with this. I mean, I really think the critical move that Mr. Harrington makes is when he says that putting this content on the hard drive is actually creating a new product, not simply, as Judge Blakey was saying, moving the same product, you know, from the closet out to the table, so to speak.
Yes, Your Honor. And I think that actually is the weakest argument, is the argument that, in a sense, in the technical sense, there is something new that's created on the hard drive. The problem in this case is from the perspective of the consumer, the patron, that's new something is intangible. It's never visible to the consumer or patron of the bar, the Basket Case. So addressing the concerns that you had with regards to moving from trademark law into copyright law, this case is raises that same concern, because the Daystar case, in a sense, said that you, from the perspective, you should not allow somebody to use trademark law to obtain perpetual protection over the copying of creative works. And in doing so, they said create a mutant copyright law. Sleptone is asking this court to do, in a sense, just that, create a mutant copyright law, protect their creative work, since it has their trademarks and trade dress throughout it. But the copyright law serves to protect such actions, And if there has been alleged that there is copyright piracy, it should be brought under the Copyright Act.
So let me push back a little bit. Let's suppose that the business of running a karaoke bar is a competitive business, and that some karaoke bars, perhaps the Basket Case, use Sound Choice trademarked tracks, and other karaoke bars use ABC tracks, something else. And let's also suppose that there's something being done, you know, file size compression, just like if you're sending a picture on your iPhone, it asks you, you know, do you want to compress it down to a smaller size? It's not as good a picture if you do that, but you have the choice. So if there's compression, suppose consumers think, you know, I don't want to go to the Basket Case because those Sound Choice karaoke things are blurry, or they skip, or they do something undesirable. So the consumer associates with the name Sound Choice bad performance or inferior performance. Why isn't that a trademark problem?
Your Honor, I think the answer is it's important to recognize, obviously, the difference between services and goods. And in that case, and I think that the reality of the confusion in this case is we're, in a sense, trying to combine services with goods in creating this trademark protection. But the reality is we are dealing with a good, this new something that's been placed on the hard drive, this intangible thing. And Daystar specifically states that you're looking to the producer of the tangible goods sold in the marketplace. And here we have something intangible that's not sold, not distributed, not given away. And therefore, there cannot be...
Meaning the electronic copy on the hard drive.
Right.
Is
or even presented in a marketplace where you can download this tangible thing and see this tangible thing. That's never alleged in the complaint.
Is it your position that the item that bears the mark itself has to be sold? I mean, if I have a hamburger business and put McDonald's and Golden Arches on my business, I'm selling hamburgers, I'm not selling my signage, right? That would still be a trademark problem, wouldn't it?
Right, but in that case, we're dealing with the physical good of a hamburger. The physicality of the hamburger that you sell, you give to the consumer.
Yeah, but the hamburger itself doesn't have to bear the infringing mark, correct? Because it has to be used in connection with the sale of a good, not the good.
Right, that's true, but in this case, you're dealing with the use of trademarks within creative content. Not there's no advertisements that Basket Case would play Sound Choice or Sound Choice karaoke is here as alleged. There's nothing alleged to that sense. So there's no display of an advertisement or this is a Sound Choice bar or an such as an IMAX theater or you don't have that here. What you have is creative content, which contains trademarks, and the solution in this case is copyright law, not trademark law.
I had the feeling that if you had blotted out the name Sound Choice somehow when you transferred it to the hard drive, you would actually also have been sued, but perhaps for other reasons.
Right, and that's the same concern that Daystar posed in defining the origin of goods. They said, we're not going to take a special definition of goods because if we credit the creator, somebody might face Lanham Act liability. If we don't credit the creator, somebody might face Lanham Act liability. So the Daystar court said, the Supreme Court said, we're going to create a bright test for what we define as origin of goods, the producer of the tangible goods sold in the marketplace. In the same light, the Daystar court cautioned, obviously, the extension of trademark law into the field of copyright law. Otherwise, if somebody placed their trademarks in the movie that you play for your clerks, they have Disney in the movie, and all of a sudden you're facing Lanham Act liability for that when reality it's a copyright claim. And in that sense, now it opens the floodgates to somebody putting trademarks in all sorts of creative content and saying, well, our trademark's in it. You played it. Somebody's confused that somehow you are associated or sponsored or you're sourcing that. And that would open the floodgates to litigation regarding trademark liability where the Supreme Court said, no, we draw the line.
If I had a bootleg copy of Frozen and played it for free but sold candy and popcorn, would that be a trademark case or a copyright case or both?
Your Honor,
obviously there's all kinds of trademarks in the production of that film when you actually show it to an audience.
Your Honor, if the only representation to the patron or consumer is the use of the mark within the creative content, then that would be a copyright case. If for some reason trademarks were then used in advertising or placing in the theater somewhere that this is sponsored by the trademark that made the movie, then I think you have a better action for a trademark claim in that case. This case, as the district court correctly recognized, is really about alleged piracy and copyright piracy and this purported failure of the Bassett case to adhere to Sleptone's media shifting policy.
So what would it take for this to be a Lanham Act case? Would it take Bassett case saying, you know, we make our own karaoke tracks, come hear our, you know, play with our original tracks when they're really Sound Choices tracks?
It would say, well, you'd have to make a representation to consumers that you are distributing or giving away.
The source
of this thing, however you define it, an intangible good, something new, something that is just a copy, in a sense. But you'd have to have something more. Yes, Your Honor.
I'm changing the subject, so if anybody has more questions on that same vein. Does Judge McDade's view represent a minority view among the various district courts that have addressed this sort of claim as is alleged in the blue brief at page 29? And where do you think the other cases have gone wrong?
Your Honor, with regards to the minority view, obviously the Northern District cases have repeatedly held that Daystar is inapplicable to this case. The Central District, in a sense, grapples with this problem and has been different, obviously, than the Northern District cases. Of all the cases that I'm aware of, there is one other case in Oregon that is was going to be before the Ninth Circuit, argued before the Ninth Circuit. It's an Oregon case that applied Daystar to this problem and said that there was no trademark liability as a result. Although there are fewer cases that say that they're...
What happened to that case? You started to say it was going to be argued before...
Oh, I'm sorry, it is. It is going to be argued. I don't know when.
Oh, it's in progress. Okay.
Yes, Your Honor, it's before the Ninth Circuit right now. Granting the motion to dismiss Sleptone's claims in that case. I hope that answers your question.
I think Judge Rogan was asking, like, where on the merits did these other, a substantial number of other judges go wrong?
I think it's in a fundamental difference of, or the fundamental, from the Second Amendment complaint itself, you can easily be confused by what the confusion is and where trademark and copyright are divided. And I think in the complaint itself, judges are cautioned to dismiss it at a 12b6. Obviously, you need to show plausible claims to advance that. And also a misunderstanding of what Daystar, the bright line test that Daystar established. And that is where I think there is a potential misunderstanding as to the application of Daystar to the case, and an inherent confusion just in the second, well, whatever complaint there is at whatever respective court. I think there's a confusion as to where the claims are, and I think that needs to be firmly established that this is really not a trademark case. It's something else, breach of contract or a copyright case.
So it sounds like you need maybe, I'm not sure whether I mean a special rule or just a rule that's attuned to digital media, that the way the creation of the alleged new product happens here either does or does not even qualify for a new product. Because you can see that in the Rolex counterfeiting case, you've copied very carefully and done the best you can, or the Henri Bertrand bag or whatever kind of case you have. And I think your concept really depends very much on the nature of the digital transformation.
Yes, Your Honor, but based on, of course, obviously I can't argue that a digital file is like a Rolex watch, in a sense that a Rolex watch, something physical put on your wrist, the consumers easily interact with that. A digital file is a bit different. You have a different marketplace. The reality of how do you interact with digital files is through online downloading. The interaction that consumers have is fundamentally different. I don't know if that changes necessarily the rule that Daystar set out with regards to separating trademark from copyright law, even with digital files, because digital files, like a video cassette, contain a creative content. It depends on the digital file.
Perhaps products invisible to the consumer are somewhat different. It's certainly the case that the copyrighted handbag or watch, or trademarked handbag or watch, is quite visible to the consumer. That's what you're trying to get them to buy. Whereas the version of the karaoke track on the hard drive is actually a matter of irrelevance to the consumer. The consumer just wants the track to play. They don't really care how the bar makes it happen.
Yes. But with a digital file, there's also obviously a marketplace for digital files, and mm-hmm. the consumer interacts with that in downloading a movie online or so forth.
Sure.
In this case, we
and there's
don't...
a lot of contributory infringement law in the copyright area
yeah,
about that.
Right. Well, but in this case, you don't have that interaction. There is no allegation of that form of interaction with the good. As 56 and 58 of the complaint talk about the digital file and the hard drive. 65 and 70 talk about when that digital file is played using appropriate software, the display of sound choice marks and trade dress is displayed for the patrons, and paragraph 70 says the patrons from that display are confused. There's nothing more as to actual interaction with the digital file. And without that interaction, in the sense it's intangible, and in this case, trademark liability, trademark Lanham Act claims are inappropriate. Excuse me.
If I stole a Rolex and sold it, then the buyer might be confused about whether or not I was authorized to sell it by the actual producer, the source. But they wouldn't actually be confused as to the actual source because it's still a Rolex. It's not a different product. For the purposes of confusion for trademark, do you need two products?
For the purposes of confusion, you need, well, there's sponsorship and approval under 43A, which would not necessarily, well, yes, you would have to look at two products or a representation that this product is sponsored by somebody else, a reverse passing off, for instance. So you don't have to have two products side by side, but in a sense you need to have something offered, different choices offered for the consumer. In your example, the Rolex watch is still made by Rolex, and the trademark still identifies the goodwill of the manufacturer of the Rolex for the consumer.
Well, isn't the point that it's either a Rolex watch, a real Rolex watch, or it's not a real Rolex watch?
Yes, Your Honor.
Yeah.
Right. Yes.
And so there's no trademark problem if he just stole it. It may be hot.
Right.
I mean, there may be lots of other
right.
things
yeah,
about it.
Criminal
yes.
for another reason, but right. that's not right. it's not a trademark problem, right?
Right. 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 Exactly. Yes, Your Honor.
So if they stole copies of the issue here and played it without authorization, is that a trademark problem or something else?
The solution is copyright. Copyright in that case.
All right. Well, your time is up.
Thank you, Judge.
And you saved a bit of time, Mr. Harrington, so we'll hear from you.
Thank you, Your Honor. And I think that does make there is an important point there. There are two products here. This is not merely stealing a Rolex watch and then selling it. It's more like stealing a Rolex watch, duplicating it, and then selling the duplicate. And that, indeed, is a trademark infringement, and I think this court should easily recognize that's what happened. The difficulty here the court and the district court seems to be having is in understanding that digital products are still physical products. Just because they exist in a way that is difficult for the human eye to perceive in their physical form does not mean they do not have a physical form. these products.
No, we understand that perfectly well, but the other problem that you admitted exists is that you, when you start with one digital product and you want to wind up with, you know, let's say a performance of it, you have to go through some intermediate digital changes to make that performance happen. And so you're drawing a line between one type of change and another type of change.
Well, I think it's a type of change that is envisioned by our original sale of the product versus a type of change that is wholly outside our control.
But that's an authorization point, isn't it?
It is, and authorization is one of those things that the Trademark Act is designed to cover. We have the right to control the use of our marks, and this is copying or making a product. Consider, for example, if there is a track that we never made, a song we never made, and they made their own recording and put our trademark on it, this court shouldn't have any difficulty recognizing that as a trademark infringement.
Sure.
So I failed to see much difference between that and using our copy as a template, or our original as a template to make their own copy. It's still the same type of act. And it doesn't create perpetual protection. You mentioned, Judge Wood, about the issue of where we wouldn't sue, or we would sue them anyway if they had blocked out our trademarks. And the answer to that question is no, or at least we wouldn't sue them on trademark infringement because it's not trademark infringement. The issue...
Hard for me to believe that if they had blocked out the trademark sound choice on the tracks and had simply loaded it all up onto their hard drive and taken your product, that you wouldn't find a theory.
Perhaps we would find a theory, but it would not be the case that we have before the court today.
Okay.
And I'd
Fair
ask
enough.
The court
all
to...
Right.
To Thank confine you. Itself to this case.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thanks
to both counsel. We'll take the case under advisement.